You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that Listen Live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we also archive all of the shows there. If you click on the on-demand button, you look on any Monday, you'll see Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and available for download. Of course, then we share all of the pictures and bios and everything on our social media, as well as on our website, SitaMediaInc.com.
That's right.
And I didn't even get a chance to post the show from last week, and we still got like 12 or 13,000 downloads from previous weeks.
Oh,
so. But thank you for the love out there. Thank you to all the listeners that are really appreciating all of the guests that Sita is getting and the information that we're sharing. It's very exciting.
That's right. And you know, we missed you last week, Miss
Ellen. Yes, I missed being here. That's for sure. But I had no voice. I had nothing. Nothing to give.
I'm glad you got your voice back.
Yes, I am too.
So for our listeners who are tuning in today for the first time to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we have been on air here in Cocoa, Florida, for 15 years. We give everyone a platform to be part of our show and speak about whatever they're advocating for. We prefer that people advocate for things that helps humanity and helps us leave a great planet behind better than we found it. And so we're pleased to say that in the past we've had authors, writers, politicians, candidates for office, bankers, scientists, educators, whatever it is, people who advocate for women's rights, people who advocate for clean air, water, sunshine, people who advocate for Medicare for all. Some people tell us their stories about daycare woes and healthcare woes, and you got it. I'm socially compassionate and fiscally responsible. That's who I am. And my friend Ellen O'Neill has been with this show for 15 years. She is the wheel that makes the back end of the show works. And, of course, Ali Tambor is our cheerleader. She comes every Monday and sits with us and enjoy our show. Thank you, Ali.
Sure thing.
And Danny Whiting runs our board.
Yes.
I think that's such a great lineup.
It is a great lineup.
And, you know, Ellen, I woke up this morning and somebody asked me, what do you get out of having your holiday party with your friends and family? And isn't it a lot of work and whatnot? And I'm like, no. I've been blessed. Thank you, God, right? And I'm able to host, cook, have people. And so what? When I leave the planet, I'll miss me myself. I'll be right. Like somewhere in cyberspace. Oh, I miss Sita being on Earth.
But the memories that you created that this past weekend, I mean, just like every other time that you've had this party, the memories that you created with people this past weekend were unmistakably epic.
Well, you know, we have a certain friend at Indie. She's a love.
All of our friends.
She kept saying your name like 100 times. I'm so glad Ellen hooked me up with you. And I'm like, yeah, but she was trying for a long time. Yeah, but anyways.
That's right.
So we have a great show today. I just wanted to thank all our sponsors for helping us to stay on air. We are going to be on for another year with Danny. He would like us to stay longer. Yeah, we're not sure yet. As long as we enjoy it, we'll do it. And, you know, I get the best guest. Today on our show, for our listeners who are tuning in, we've got a lady by the name of Mira Tanna. She is a candidate for Orlando City Council District 3, and that includes the neighborhoods in Baldwin Park And she will be calling in second segment. She's a friend of our friend, Anna Ishkamani. And so I wanted to talk to her and have her on air. And, you know, pretty much city councils all over the United States, they do pretty much the same thing.
Well, they operate the same way,
yes,
for sure.
So,
but every city has their challenges, just like every, you know, just like our cities.
Right.
So it's good to hear what other challenges are being solved by different boards.
Right. So she'll be calling in. On our first segment, I met this lovely lady. Her name is Claire Fenlon May. And for some reason, I have her down in my phone as Claire Fenton with a T. I changed her name, which I shouldn't have. And she's a visual designer and a writer. And she's here on our show sitting right next to me to talk a little bit about herself and all the good things she does. And then I just found out that she is also a person who worked in the medical profession, which is wonderful. So Claire Fenlon May, welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And thanks for taking the time to drive in from Tampa, Florida.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know Florida, Tampa is like 160 miles away. So this is a big trip for you.
It wasn't a bad drive. Didn't mind it at all.
Got to see the whole state.
Yeah, I actually like road trips. So kind of gets the dust off my brain.
Yeah, and if you like talk radio, it kind of keeps you.
Absolutely.
And it's your company, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I do. So talk to us a little bit. You are a designer. You're an artist. You're also an author. And you are also, is it a nurse or what?
No,
what
I was, I have a degree in business, in marketing and operations, and another degree in art. I've been an artist all my life, but art doesn't support you. And I was a single mom. So I ended up in marketing, and I ended up in national and international marketing. I just kept walking through doors and getting jobs and climbing up some sort of a ladder. I worked in a hospital in Santa Rosa for 17 years running senior services in three counties.
Here in Florida?
In California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm from New York. I did my teens in New Jersey, and then I moved across country to get out of the nest when I was 21. And lived in a pup tent for 3 months, reestablished myself in California, not knowing anyone there, and just kept on going.
That's the wonderful thing about the United States. You could pretty much move into any city, anywhere, and as long as you know who to call for lights, water, telephone, you're good to go.
Right.
And you got your first loss in security, right?
Right. Well, I worked as a waitress. So I made a lot of contacts, and I found a realtor that helped me find a place to live, which actually was amongst 500 acres on top of a mountain. And I had full range of these 500 acres when I wasn't working. So I'm into the environment. I'm into herbology. I'm into natural healing. At the time I was wearing Birkenstocks and being the hippie kind of person, but I don't ever really relate to that myself because I still like couture.
Right. And you also won radio at one time.
Yes.
Yes. And you know, we're all watching what's happening with journalism.
Oh, my God.
And the, you know, like our president like to say fake news. I like to say a lot of propaganda on all forms of news outlet. It's like the end result is how much money can you make off the ads in between the show.
Exactly.
Right. And your experience with radio, was that here in Florida? Or
yes,
elsewhere?
It was. It was in Florida. I've done every medium, actually. I've worked in TV, radio. I sold airtime. I did, you know, graphic design. I did everything in advertising. And then I became the management of different programs. And usually get recognition within 6 months.
Yes.
I'm just a guerrilla marketer.
Yeah.
I don't play by the rules necessarily. I have walked down the street in costumes to promote things.
I don't blame you. And so without mentioning names, you just mentioned to us and that you also are an advocate for people to have health care as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I ran a senior services program for a hospital in Santa Rosa for quite a few years, and I ended up managing it in three counties. I built it up from 9,000 members to 32,000 members, and I, in a short time, as the budget was reduced. But in that time was very beneficial in community building because there were a lot of senior services that weren't connected. So I created a non-membership, non-fee, you know, they didn't have to pay anything to participate. They just had to make themselves available of all the senior services that were available in the counties for a speakers group to come out and speak on what services they offered. It gave a whole pool of speakers to all of the senior services because we called on each other and it built community. And we didn't charge anything. We didn't cost us anything. We just did it because it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, and that's what's lacking today is that sense of community. Because, you know, I'm also a long-term care nurse, and one of the things that I see a lot is dental care. I mean, people are pulling their teeth out, teeth, whatever, left and right, because they can't afford crowns, they can't afford fillings, some of them can't eat. We have a lot of edentulous patients, dentures that are ill-fitting. And it's so sad because when your dentures are not fitting well, you can't eat, you lose weight. It affects, I mean, sometimes I feel like everyone should spend time in a nursing facility and sees what happens to everyone when Mr. Age comes around, you know?
Yeah, but that gets to hygiene. We, as a health provider, you know that disease enter through your mouth a lot. So you're taking care of your mouth, doing your teeth and everything, is something you need to learn as a young child. I'm the youngest of six, and I remember like little ducklings being sent to the dentist and getting our, I had seven cavities by the time I was seven because I ate a lot of candy bars. And they were only a nickel at the time. Now they're $3.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Claire Fenlon-May, and she's a visual design and a writer. So talk to us a little bit about what inspired you to pursue art in the first place. Because I'm looking at your jacket and I'm thinking, yeah, you're artsy.
Yeah. I decided a long time ago, when I was 5 years old as a child, my parents had, we had a neighbor that was a famous portraiture in New York City. And I remember going to visit him in his bed. He was sick, so I went with my mom and we visited him, Mr. Lawrence Tony, and he asked me what I wanted to do because he said that I had very expressive fingers. When people with long fingers have creativity, he saw that in me, I guess. So he asked me what I wanted to be, and I said I wanted to be an artist, and I've always been one. I can't stop myself. I have so much work that I've done and I keep making it.
Well, you know, my grandson was saying the other day, he wants to be a rock star, and he's 5 years old.
Oh.
And I said, oh, you can be that after you become a doctor, lawyer, engineer, or open a business. And he said, what about a police? And I said, well, if you want to be a police, you have to be a lawyer and a police.
Right.
And then you could sing on the side. And he's like, that's a lot of work, Nanny. I said, but that's just how it is. And he says, why? And I said, well, because you don't make a lot of money sometimes. You might fulfill your heart. And then I gave him the speech about living under the bridge. You won't have enough money to pay your bills. And I think I traumatized the poor child.
What a scary grandma.
Good old Indian mom.
Well, you know.
You know, Catholic moms have Catholic guilt. Yeah. Indian moms have, like, you're going to be a professional. Yeah. You have no choice.
Well, you know, it's like me. I could say, oh, I'm going to be a caterer and I'll make curry chicken and sell it. But who is going to buy my curry chicken enough for me to pay my rent
right. And
pay my bills? No one. Maybe my friends will just feel sorry and buy it.
I'm always impressed by athletes that have real professions afterwards. Like, they're not just the quarterback, they also have a law degree or something.
That's right.
And that way they can sustain themselves. But I always looked at that when I watched sports.
So how do you develop your artistic skills?
Oh,
tell us what kind of things you produce, because you do visual design as well.
Yes. Well, I got really turned on to printing when I was 13. I learned to do old style silk screening. I've done everything in printing. I actually own my own press now, but I got very interested in printing. And when I graduated high school, I was unclear where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do. I thought I'd save my parents some money and work instead. So I became a letterpress operator for a store that was a lot of fun doing the letter pressing signs for all of the things they needed. And then I was asked to become a manager of a department store, and I didn't realize I had that skill, but as I mentioned, I'm a pretty hard worker, and I turned the store around in a short time and turned it from the red to the black, and I did that for a while, and then I decided I'm going to go to college when I was turning 20, and I was a design major with a minor in communications, and I was also working on a preschool teacher's.
So you're self-taught. A lot of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
No kind of formal education on being an artistic person like that.
Right. I'm a patchwork quilt. Oh. I pulled it. Whatever I was interested in, I went for. And I explored all media. And it just, and as I mentioned, I'll walk through an open door and see, you know, what's going on in there, and I'll see, can I contribute? And I will contribute as long as I can, but I'm honest and I care. That's why I was happy to come on the show, because I resonate with what your mission is.
Yeah, and what about challenges? Did you have any challenges?
Oh, yeah.
So talk to our listeners a little bit about the challenges you
have. Sometimes, you know, well, your story of challenge is going to be somebody else's success model that they're going to try and follow. I always believe that.
Yes. Well, you know, I was listening to the radio on the way here, and I heard that song, I Get Knocked Down, But I Get Up Again. That's one of my songs. Although not the drinking part. I don't do that. But you learn by experience. And I've had a lot of experiences. I've been in 5 industries. I've been an instructor, a teacher. I've been a student. I'm always willing to learn. I don't believe that my opinion is always the correct one, because
you could bottle that and sell it. So many people think their opinion is the only one.
I know. I've been working on something lately. Well, let me just say that I've been following our current administrator in the White House since I was 18. I've been working voter polls for 20 years, nonpartisan, but I really believe we need to get the vote out. Personally, I do care, but I don't care what you vote. I just want you to start voting, because it's your right. And also, if you've got such an opinion, get out and vote. Because could you imagine if everyone voted, what our society would really look like? Well, we only have 23%, or at the most 40%.
Even for sometime for the off-year elections, it's worse.
I know. It's
terrible. But you know, you touch on a good point. You know, and there's something in our country right now which a lot of people are complaining about. It's called ageism. There's so much people with experience that can walk into a company from day one and help those Gen Zs and whatever you call them. You know, they're not working. A lot of them are just there because they want to get a few bucks to do whatever, but they're not disciplined enough and detail-oriented, and they do give them a job description when they get hired. But if you go by that job description, the older people are so disciplined, they would follow that, but people are not giving them a chance.
I don't think they train people like that. I remember being trained in every job that I received.
Yep.
And
they do train them, but I think we're it's a different generation.
It's just a different work ethic right now. And going back to the voting portion of it, it's taking personal responsibility. And I think that's where we kind of lack a little bit in our society right now. But one of the things that I was really just, even the night that we got the proclamation for the radio show here in the city of Cocoa, I don't think a lot of the folks that had been there in that room, they're not regular attendees of their own city councils. So even if, you know, if you're a new voter, or if it's something that you haven't experienced before, even going to your own city council meetings and getting involved in just your local government and your local city manager and the mayors and you learn more about your own town and then how all of that works. I think that provides a little bit of a comfort level, and people start seeing that part of personal and social responsibility of what you're supposed to do, and an integrity of what you're supposed to do.
And you know what? It all starts at home. If yes. the If you live in a home where your parents don't vote, where your parents don't care how the sidewalk looks in front of your home, where your parents don't show up for a parent-teacher conference at school, where your parents doesn't take an interest in teaching you to drive or why you should know that driving is a privilege, it's not a right. It all starts at home. The children are mirror images of the parents. So when you have a lot of people, like you say, who don't vote and they say, oh, it doesn't count. Well, guess what? You're teaching your children that, because the type of diaper that they put on a baby in the hospital to the coffin or the cremation that they put you in when you pass away from the planet, it's all political.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your high school, your teacher pay, how much they make, the insurance, the contract for the food in the school, the janitor contract, everybody has their hands in politics.
I agree. I did have an experience myself with that. I never stopped voting. I've been voting since I was 18. But I was on welfare for a short time. I went when I was pregnant. I had a full-time job. I wanted well baby clinics. So I went to the county. I said, can I get the well baby clinics? Because I don't have enough to support myself with health care. So they made me take everything, the food stamps, the money, and the medical care. And what I realized after 2 years is that I could not get ahead on that. Every time I made money, they took money.
It's not meant for you to stay on it forever. It's a stepping stone.
Exactly. But what it made me see was that people get caught up in the process of supporting their family, keeping the roof over their head, the shoes on the feet, and the food in their mouths. They don't have enough energy to focus on all the other things that affect them. And so they don't come and show up.
Yeah.
Because they're overwhelmed.
And when you think about it, it's an excuse that people make. But at the same time, we do live in the greatest nation on earth. There are so many countries in the world that if you are pregnant or you give birth to a child, that government is not going to give you food stamps. They're not going to give you Section 8. They're not going to help you with Medicaid expansion. We have that in this country, but it doesn't mean you have to live on it forever.
But then that's where, for me, it funnels back to personal responsibility.
And so they could vote because they do get health care. They do get food stamps. They do get a place to live. So when they say, oh, I can't vote, then you think about it and you're like, you're making an excuse because all the voting places are within distance for people. Nobody has to take a horse and a carriage to get to a voting site
and
anymore.
And there is absentee voting.
Yes. And vote by mail.
Yes.
Yes. You know, that was a great observation. But that is the population that a lot of us are trying to fight for.
Exactly.
Right? We are the ones that are talking about Medicaid expansion. We're talking about a woman's right to choose. We're talking about, having the education about your reproductive system so you don't use your reproductive systems willy-nilly all over the place.
Education. They've stopped teaching how our government works so people don't comprehend how it works. They don't realize how important their vote is because they forgot or they weren't taught or it wasn't brought home to them that is their right, but it's also their responsibility.
So circling back a little bit, you said with the marketing degree and with and the marketing that you do for your writing and for your art, how has that changed? Like how, because of, the new political format and how things have changed over the last 4 or 5 years, how has it really changed in the way that you're marketing and what arts and visuals and so forth are you doing?
I am now on all of the sites. I have some I don't even understand because my family's on it, like Thread. I post on that sometimes, but I don't really.
Are you on TikTok?
I'm currently boycotting Amazon and TikTok for my own.
Are your family supportive of your writing and your art? And where can we find your work?
I have been going through I moved to Florida in 2017 and I had to recreate myself. So it took me a few years because I had some real estate to deal with. And I've only been in my house for 3 years now where I have an art studio. I had everything in storage.
Yeah.
So it's been 3 years that I've been pulling together and I still keep making art. It's like,
is it pieces that you could talk to us about and what inspires you to draw?
Or well, what type I am. Is it? I think I'm a very intuitive artist because I have a series called Endangered Species that I've been doing and adding to since 1995, and it is the human race. We are endangered by ourselves. We endanger ourselves. We endanger our universe. I believe
we are our worst enemy at times.
I believe we're supposed to be the caretakers, like the American Indian said. We're supposed to caretake for the world, but we're not. We're pillaging it. Yeah. We're using it and not returning it. I was driving here and I saw a workman on the side of the road just throw a plastic bottle away, and I wanted to roll my window down. But I didn't. I restrained myself because, you know, I'm not in charge of everybody.
Are your family members supportive of your writing and your art?
They are somewhat, but they're caught up in their own lives. I've noticed the next generation. My son was in the military, and he works at MacDill Air Force Base, and he is so, I wanted to say stressed. He is very stressed in his position, but he loves it.
Yeah.
And I'm not allowed to know what he does because it's, you know, some of it's top secret stuff.
Which is okay, but, you know, he's not the, it seems to be it's something that our young people, a lot of them are experiencing right now. And what I notice is a lot of the young people are turning to alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And you would see, even like, Ellen, I have to commend you because you are around people all the time when you're singing and you don't consume alcohol at all. And you have to bottle that and sell it. How are you so disciplined?
But it goes back to that personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. I have a responsibility when I'm paid to do a show. And I want to make sure that I give it
and
my
all. And
you don't
want to dance topless on a table or
no,
nothing.
No, yeah, it's not my thing anymore. I'm kidding. Kidding.
Danny's getting a visual.
But it's one of those things that, once again, it goes back to personal responsibility. I know my job. I know what I'm supposed to do. And I want to make sure that, you know, like I say all the time to the guys, I say, we leave it on the stage. You know, we leave everything we can on the stage because we want people to be able to feel everything, feel the music, feel the energy, make memories, all of that stuff. Just like with art, with any kind of art, you want to leave that lasting impression. So I don't think I'm my best when,
yeah,
if I were to drink.
I've watched you work the crowd and it's awesome. It's just, it's a good feeling to have a friend that's, is in the public like that amongst so many people that's eating meat, and you're also a vegetarian, and yep, you're so disciplined. But Claire, coming back to you, you're a writer as well. What have you written? What is it, books, articles? What have you written?
I'm working on writing. A number of my artwork is related for children's stories. I have several boxes that I've written in journals that are for children. I am very interested in teaching parents to start teaching their children immediately as soon as you bring them home to read to them, hold them, read to them.
Read to them in the womb.
Keep reading to them.
And right, Allie?
Oh, yeah.
I did that with my son when I brought him home, and I, you know, fed him, burped him. He's all clean and dry, and then I'd start talking to him, and he'd watch my lips, and then I put his little hand on my throat so he could feel that there was
your
where
voice
the voice
box.
Was coming.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And he's bright.
He's a smart kid. Yeah. Was there like a defining moment when you realized that, in addition to business administration and being an educator and working with medical stuff and all that, there was a defining moment when you said that I really like being an artist more than anything else?
Well, yeah. But I got involved when I was in college at Glassboro State University, which is now Rowan University. It's where Lyndon B. Johnson met Kosygin, mm-hmm, in 1969. Anyway, I was becoming a preschool teacher. I was very interested in development. And the reason is, when I was 6 years old, I went deaf. There was no technology for tubes in your ears, and both my eardrums burst, and I was deaf for a year. Gave me a different perspective on things. And so when I was in college and I got involved with the teacher strike, and I was part of the student ad hoc committee to inform parents and students what the strike would do to them, and the strike shut down, And I
you're a rebel right there.
I was disillusioned, so I said, screw it, I'm moving to California. So I was a bit of a, you know, rebel. Well, I still am. You know,
Allie, do you have anything to add to our guest? She's so, you know, you're very lively for doing all the stuff you did. I could tell.
I'm not done.
There you go.
That's exactly the right thing to say.
I think your vacation on planet Earth is not going to come to an end right now. You have a lot of stuff to give.
I hope to bring something because I think, you know, I don't know how many times I thought, what am I here for? What the heck is this? You know, you get into a situation, you work hard and then it falls apart and you go, what the heck?
Yeah.
And so you pick your boots back up and get on with it, and you try and figure a different way to get in. As Bruce Lee says, be like water.
Yep.
You know, you either be like ice or fluid, one drop at a time, whatever it takes. Try to make a difference, because I'm a humanitarian before I'm a female, and then I happen to have a very strong male side of me.
Yeah.
I'm very developed. I'm balanced in myself. So,
well, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people think in order to make a difference in on our planet, you have to run for office, or you have to have some big, fat, fancy degrees and be a multimillionaire or a billionaire. But the truth is, you could make a difference on our planet and make things better for other people just by being yourself. It only takes one person to start something, and then people will follow.
And you know what? It's much easier to be authentic than to try and keep a cover.
Oh, I'll say.
Yeah, my memory's not that good.
No.
I'm going to let
Allie add to that about being authentic, because I think that's
absolutely
the problem with too many people is when they try to be somebody they're not.
Yeah, stop faking it. Be yourself. Be your honest self. And there's a way to chat without saying, well, you're stupid and I disagree. That's not really the thing to say. So, but that doesn't mean that you can't be well-rounded and well-educated and stand by your own firm convictions.
Mm-hmm. I think education stops.
Right.
No,
I think you always win when you move through life with authenticity, honesty, love, and a grateful heart.
That's right.
And it certainly helps us artists to be able to to keep our wits about us and make sure that we send out all information. I do have, she does not have a website, but claire.may1@gmail.com.
Yes.
And we'll make sure we share her information as well as her card. Yeah. She's also on LinkedIn under AWI Creations. So if you check out LinkedIn, you can find
Claire's information. Yeah, we want to see those animals.
Those human
animals.
The artwork.
The two-footed animals that make wrecked planet Earth.
For always sharing stories of persistence and certainly giving back to the community and everything that we do. If all of us could do just a tenth of that, how much better our world would be. So, folks, we're going to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
You can stay with family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in the very sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right. On 1510 WWBC, you can go to that website and hit the Listen Live button. Get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, you can also download the shows from the archive there. Just go to Mondays in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and you'll see all of the shows there. Of course, we share all of that on our social media as well as our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
Right. And for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, we share the airwaves right here on Monday with anyone who would like to speak about being an advocate for anything that's good in our planet, and kind and compassionate, and want to leave a better footprint on planet Earth, more better than we found the Earth.
That's right.
And today's no different. Why do I have a funny feeling that our guest in studio, Miss Claire right here, would be coming back. Claire Fenlon May would be coming back to visit us from Tampa. I just feel like she's having so much fun with us. Yeah, right. She will come back.
It's fascinating.
So I am, as you all know, I am always on social media trying to scope out and get some guests for our show, people that I think are quality and substance and want to give back to planet Earth. And I found a lovely lady, Mira Tanna. She is a candidate for Orlando City Council District 3. And of course, then I realized that we have a mutual friend, Anna Ishkamani. And I looked into it a little bit and I said, wow, she is running for a city council street, a seat in Baldwin Park, Audubon Park, Rosemont, Spring Hill, and the surrounding areas. And I wanted to hear a little bit about her and why she decided to run for city council. So I invited her on our show.
That's right.
Awesome. So Mira, talk to us a little bit about your background and what made you decide to throw your hat in the ring and run for a city council seat.
First of all, thank you so much for having me here, Sita, and hello to all of your listeners. I am a longtime civil rights advocate and public servant, and for the past 7 years, I've served as the City of Orlando's grants manager, where I've been able to bring in about $125 million worth of funding to do things like improve our water quality and make our schools safer and protect our neighborhoods from flooding and natural disasters. So when I heard that the current commissioner was thinking about retiring after 20 years, I thought that I could really lend my experience in City Hall and my longtime experience as an advocate to advocate for District 3 residents and make our community more equitable, sustainable, and culturally vibrant.
You've got the experience to lead. And in addition to that, you worked as a library manager, and you are a civil rights advocate, just like most of us in the studio today.
Yeah, I actually worked in fair housing for 11 years, and we talked about this a minute ago. My father was from India, came to this country in the 1960s. He was turned down for an apartment just because of his foreign accent on the phone. And so I had the honor of helping people who had been, who were in that situation, you know, decades later, and to work to try to prevent discrimination from happening in our housing market to anybody.
Yeah, it's such a loving thing when you can take your experience and turn that into a work of art, into like something, a work of love, because you want to give back to the community. And what happened to your dad, it happens to many people because of the color of their skin, because of the texture of their hair, because of the way they speak. Because of their mother tongue, so to speak. And honestly, it should not happen anywhere in the world, especially here in the United States. I remember when we moved to Chicago, my husband was there for his residency, and we were the only dark-skinned people in the apartment complex. And I remember somebody saying, was it difficult for you guys to get in here? It wasn't. But I could tell that a lot of people were not used to seeing Indian people in that complex, you know? And it does make you feel, a little bit like, oh, I'm sticking out like a sore thumb. But once people get to know you and they know you're assimilated into this culture and all that, it's okay. But I understand what you are saying. And as a little girl, it looks like that affected you a lot, so that now you're able to take that experience and help other people so they can get a home, so they can get health insurance, so they can live.
Yeah, and, you know, actually, we moved to Orlando in 2011. My husband is from Nigeria, so we are a very international family. And one of the things that we love about the city is how diverse it is, and there is a rich mix of cultures here. And I want to make sure that every culture is recognized and that every person has the ability to thrive in our city.
Yeah, and he's also a poet, from what I understand. Your husband is a professor over at UCF, and he's a poet, and and your children are beautiful. I've seen them. I've seen some of the pictures. And there's something about you, Mira, that is so special, and I do believe you're going to be an awesome candidate, an awesome city council person for District 3. Now, what makes you different from the person that you're running against?
So I have a lot of respect for Roger Chapin. He grew up here in Orlando as a son of Orange County's first mayor. But he spent his 30 years really opening the doors of government to big business as a government affairs person for companies like Mears Transportation, Darden Restaurants, General Mills. Whereas I've had 30 years of public service where I've put our residents first and given back to the community. And I think that's a clear difference between us. Those are the relationships he has, and, you know, his priority seems to be what the corporate interests are that he's funding his campaign. And I've always been an advocate for people. My Quaker faith is really central to
Mira, I just need to stop you just for a second. You're breaking up a little bit, so I'm not sure where you, if you move somewhere, but
go back where you were.
Go back to your first point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're breaking up the whole time you were speaking.
Not verbally, physically.
Oh. Yeah. So city council members are supposed to be the voice of the constituents. How do you plan to be that voice for not just the people that vote for you, because this is a nonpartisan race, but you want to be a voice for everyone. Tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends how you plan to be that voice.
Well, I think we have to find different ways for people to interact with City Hall. It can't just be having people show up on a Monday at 2 p.m. for a city council meeting. And so I'm really dedicated to finding other ways, whether it be through surveys. I did yesterday, I did Ask Me Anything on Reddit for people who are up late at night on their computer and had questions for me. And it was a town hall kind of online format where they could ask me anything and I would respond. I go into communities. I've been to about 10 different faith congregations, ranging from Christian to Hindu to Muslim to Jewish, to meet people where they're at and to learn about their concerns and to help lift them up with the myriad of organizations that here in the city.
Yeah. And I also noticed that your mother is from the Netherlands. So were you fortunate to go and see the tulips at all?
I was. And I also have taken a very good note from their public transit system. And it's really something that's fueling this campaign, is that I really have a vision that Orlando can become a more walkable, bikeable, and transit-friendly city if we invest in public transit and in safe streets. And when we do that, we will find that we don't need as much space for parking, and we can use some of that to make our housing more affordable.
Yeah. You are a visionary. You have a vision to lead for the city of Orlando and your district in District 3. That seems to be a driving force, not just for people who are running in Orlando with the transportation, but in New York and other states. Everyone is thinking the same thing. How can we make transportation better, smoother for the residents of that city? And I know there's a lot of conflict when people talk about that. It's not given free stuff. It's about the convenience for the citizens. So how do you think you could help the overcrowding, the traffic, the congestion in your area?
So first and foremost, I lead by example. I am a bus rider, and if I'm elected, I believe I'll be the only Lynx bus rider that is an elected official in Central Florida. And that's given me a real everyday, sometimes gritty experience of what it's like on our public transit system. And I also will fight hard for a dedicated source of funding for public transit. We are the largest city in the country that has no dedicated source of funding for public transit. And it's because we are underfunded that we don't have enough bus routes. The Link system isn't always the most appealing. It doesn't go everywhere where people need to go.
Yeah, and it takes so long in between. It's such the timing between the buses. I think more people would use the bus system if they had like buses coming like every 10 minutes, you know, because who wants to maintain a car, put gas in it or whatever, plug it in? And in addition to that, the insurance and the way people drive, it's crazy, especially in Orlando.
Well, the fact of keeping up a car these days is really expensive. But Mira, I want to just congratulate you on that piece that you do use the Lynx system, because again, it not only gives you insight into the working folks that are trying to use the transportation for work and be able to get their kids to schools and so forth, but you're also experiencing the folks that are disabled, that are certainly healthy enough to vote and healthy enough to do all of those things. But transportation always remains a problem as healthcare becomes, you know, even more challenging navigating all of that. So you're also seeing like the folks that are sight challenged or handicapped or some of those issues. And I don't know what the population of disabled folks is in Orlando, but I know here in Brevard County, we have a huge community, deaf community, a visually challenged society.
Her seat is for District 3.
Yeah,
not but, the whole city.
Yeah, but even, but even saying, still, yeah. even in your district, knowing knowing and being able to see firsthand the challenges that that a huge population of citizens is experiencing, kudos to you, and kudos to all of the changes that you make as a result of that.
Right. So, Mira, the city council members are responsible for creating and enacting local laws and ordinances. Are there any kind of laws and ordinances that you've seen in City Council District 3 that you think you would have to look at?
Well, one of the things that I want to review are our parking requirements to see whether we need so many parking spaces. And we do need to, again, pair that review or any changes in minimum parking requirements with a robust public transit system and infrastructure for biking and walking that's safe, because people need alternatives if they're not going, if not every adult in their household is going to own a car. I think that's one place where we can work pretty quickly on
and put up some lights. Some of the areas are so dark, especially on Highway 50 that turns into 520 in the nighttime. We need some more lighting up that area. If you could tell someone, that would be great.
That's Bethlow, right?
Yeah, it is.
Bethlow and Christmas area.
It is. Another critical thing is
that this might be unincorporated Orange County. So yeah,
we'll have to. I'll get on the case for that, but. So talk to us about the city budget. I mean, you are responsible as well as a city council member to assist with the growth and development of your city. Do you see any areas with the city's budget that you can help as well?
Well, we have a $1.8 billion budget, so it is an awesome responsibility to be over that budget and to make decisions about where money is going to go. And our budget is really, more than anything, our statement of values, right? Where we decide to spend money are the things that we are literally valuing. And so, you know, we operate at the city in a very fiscally responsible way. Right now, we've got some pressures coming from the state level as they are looking to see whether you can even levy property taxes. So, you know, it is an awesome responsibility. We have to first wait to see what happens at the state level, and we have to advocate strongly for local control so that we're able to make those decisions to make sure we're continuing to fund public safety and our parks and our recreation programs and our transportation, our infrastructure. But having been the city's grants manager for this long while, I also know where to find other sources of funding to be able to enact priorities that I have. And so that will be a real asset that I bring to this position.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I noticed in Orlando too is they're building everywhere. There are apartments going up everywhere in Orlando when you're driving on 528 and you're exiting off of any of those areas there. Talk to us a little bit about how can you help as a city council member to bring more affordable housing to your area and help the people that we know are struggling with their rent and car payment and health insurance and all these things.
Yeah, and I think the area that you're talking about, again, is probably unincorporated Orange County. And so the idea within the city limits is to build more infill housing, because we can't go out further. We have to go up or in. And the denser we get, the more we'll be able to support our public transit system and create more walkable communities that have foot traffic that can sustain our local and small business and our main streets. So part of what we need to do is to have leadership that doesn't allow a lot of the neighborhood opposition that comes when a new multifamily building or affordable housing is being proposed. So we have to make that case to our residents that we are in an affordable housing crisis and that that kind of neighborhood opposition, you know, we need to take into account really legitimate concerns, but just opposition for the sake of I don't want change is really not something that's going to help our region. It's going to increase homelessness and it's going to increase stress on our working families.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the old days, they used to say that they wanted people to, you know, someone who had a drug problem or an alcohol problem or a mental health issue or mental illness, they would say, oh, let's get that person cleaned up. God knows a lot of people end up in jails and prisons, and it's like a mental institution for so many. But there's a new wave of thinking that you should give people a place to live first. And if a person has a place to live and they could take care of that place and have a pillow in the night and a blanket to cover them and a little kitchen to cook, just maybe you might be helping those people too. So do you feel like maybe that there's some zoning laws that might have to be changed so that we could get affordable housing in your area as well?
Well, we do have fair housing laws that prevent discrimination on basis of disability, which could include substance use disorder or mental health issues.
You're breaking up again.
Yes.
Wherever you were before in the bulk of the interview, go back to that spot. Because we can't understand a word you're saying.
I'm sitting in the exact same spot.
I don't know what's happening.
So I'll just turn my head.
You're good now. You're good. Well, we have a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask you really quick, how do you plan to involve the residents in your town to get on board with your campaign, get out the vote? We know here in Florida we have early voting, vote by mail, voting person. And we were speaking in the studio earlier today about the people that say, my vote does not count. How do you tell those people that, yes, it counts, and that you, Mira Tanner, is a candidate for the Orlando City Council District 3, and that you need them to come out and support you?
Well, it's easy, because on November 4th, we ended up 14 votes behind the more corporate-funded candidate. Just 14 votes. And so we are in a runoff. Now it's just the two of us. Outraise me 3-1. So I am the underdog. I'm the grassroots candidate. I've got the people power. And I've got, we've really engaged hundreds of volunteers during this campaign to go out there and knock doors with me. We've knocked over 19,000 doors, and I personally have done over 5,000 of that. I've made over 1,300 phone calls. So this is a people-powered campaign, and every single vote is going to count.
Yeah, and I want you to know, I went to a healthcare summit, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and I was sitting next to two young people, and both of them had your T-shirt on, and they were like, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and they were like, and I said, oh, she's going to be coming on my show, and I was talking to them. They're like, oh, she's wonderful. And they did touch a little bit about the candidates that get in so much money, but they have no substance to themselves at all. And they were like, this lady is going to do it because she's a people person and she's knocking on doors. So, I mean, from what I'm seeing, I think the wave of the future, what the young people are seeing in people running for office, it's not about the money. It's about the message. And a lot of politicians or a lot of candidates, they don't get their message out. So I want to give you a minute to just give us your elevator speech, if you can. 30 seconds. Take 30 seconds before we go off air and give us your elevator speech, why someone should vote for you.
I really want to build trust in local government so local government works for everybody and so that this is a city where everyone can thrive. And I also care about investing in public transit and making our streets safe for pedestrians and cyclists and tackling our biggest challenge of affordable housing. And so if you care about those issues, please go out and vote. Tomorrow is Election Day. Polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Share information on social media. Follow me at Tana4Orlando or at miratana.com and learn more about our race. And please join us in this really exciting movement for change.
And I will make sure I share all of that great information, including the great pictures of your family and all the great things that you're doing out there in Orlando. Thanks again for sharing the airwaves with us and getting your message out. To Claire, that our first guest, thank you so much for being here with us and taking the drive over from Tampa. And once again, folks, thanks for tuning in to Viewpoint with C.